Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
That is our incubator.
Who had to go in an incubator?
Me and Daphne.
You did, didn't you? What did you have to go in there for?
Because I wasn't well when I first came out of Mummy's tummy.
I'm Becky Green, and that is my nearly six-year-old son, Bobby. My life revolves around stories. I write children's audio stories for a living, so my 9-to-5 is princesses, astronauts, dinosaurs, and of course, happy endings. And Bobby, my brilliant little boy, is the happiest of endings. But in real life, stories are a bit more complicated. On the 25th of August 2018, I gave birth to twin baby boys 8 weeks early. There were no warning signs until the last moment, when I went from 32 weeks pregnant to a busy neonatal ward in a flash. On the 31st of August, at 6 days old, twin two, Jessie, died from abdominal sepsis. Twin one, Bobby, would stay between two different neonatal units over the next 5 weeks before he was ready to come home. For BBC World Service, this is A Better Start. Across the world, 1 in 10 babies in 2020 were born prematurely, which is around 13.4 million babies. But it's not just premature babies who receive neonatal care. In the UK, around 60% of babies admitted to neonatal units are born at full term. So, me and Bobby are going to find out about the world of neonatal care, the extraordinary work that happens every day across the globe, and the people who are finding solutions to the problems babies face at the start of their lives. Solutions which are keeping more vulnerable babies alive and helping them thrive.
That is Meg. This is Daphne.
Yeah.
And this is Meg.
Yeah. And that's a colder ale, isn't it, in the unit?
So we'll have a mix of babies that are in intensive care and high dependency in this room. A lot of monitors, a lot of equipment, a lot of beeping. I'm not sure how you found it, but even as a nurse, you can sometimes stand back and think, wow, that's got to be overwhelming.
The sound of those beeps is something that hits you as soon as you walk through the door of a neonatal unit. They are so overwhelming because you're never quite sure what they're indicating, and thrust into that situation, you tend to assume the worst. However, when you've been there a while, those sounds become almost normal. And actually, when we went home, I missed the familiarity of those noises and the idea that all those machines were doing their job in keeping Bobby alive. Given that Bobby still sleeps with white noise, it feels like those sounds have had a lasting impact on him too.
I'm Jo Richardson. I am a sister on the neonatal unit and I have been here for 25 years.
Bobby and Jessie spent 6 days in Calderdale's neonatal unit, in a busy hospital in the north of England, before being transferred to different hospitals for more specialist care. Bobby came back and spent another 10 days here before being discharged.
There is a lot of fear, isn't there, when you first step through the doors here, what you come into. You come walk past us on the corridor. So until you need us, you don't know we're here.
It's very hard to put into words what Calderdale Neonatal Unit means to us. We're very lucky. By global standards, the care our family received makes us extremely privileged. For me, although it's tied in with so much heartache, it still feels like a really positive place. I always feel incredibly grateful that if Jesse only got to spend 6 days here, he spent it with us and the people at Calderdale, who were doing everything they could for him.
And what was Daddy doing to you, Megan?
He's looking after you, isn't he? He had to put his hands through that hole, put it on your head, and it made you feel better.
Bobby and Jesse were moved to separate hospitals as they'd both become very poorly very quickly. They both needed specialist care, and there simply wasn't space at that time for two babies to be moved to the same hospital. There were some items that we'd been given when we arrived at Calderdale that could move with them both. Four knitted squares that we'd swap between me and both babies so we had each other's smell. A craft set that made stamps of Bobby and Jessie's footprints. And, to my total bewilderment at the time, a pair of crocheted octopuses.
It is one of them toys where you can pull. It's called an octopus. Mine was green, purple.
These soft crocheted octopuses look just like a toy you might bring as a newborn gift. But, like most things on a neonatal ward, they're more than they appear. It isn't just an item that brings comfort to babies and parents. It's good for the babies too.
She made an octopus for the baby because the mother loves octopuses.
Tina Hogard Flink is a founding member of the Danish Octo Project. It began in 2013 when a group of volunteers, including Tina, began to create colourful crocheted octopus for premature babies. The project quickly spread and there's now groups providing for hundreds of hospitals right across the world.
The hospital staff agreed to put it in the incubator because it was made of cotton and stuff that could be washed in the hospital washing machines and thereby kept clean enough to be with baby. The staff in the ward started noticing that that baby was sleeping more. He was more calm. He had a more stable heart rate and his breathing was more stable than the other babies who did not have an octopus. It is, in far most cases, the first personal thing they get. To me and the very heart of the project, this octopus was a message of love and recognition.
That was mine and Jessie's first toy.
The soft tentacles of the octopus are thought to mimic the feeling of the umbilical cord, bringing the baby's comfort and something to hold onto which isn't wires. The sense of calm seems to bring peace to their bodies. Touch is vital for a baby not able to get those early cuddles.
My name is Jamila Jackson. I am the CEO of Nurture by Design and the engineer of the Zaki.
Jamila is remarkable, a scientist galvanised by her experience of having a preemie or premature baby under extraordinary stress.
My baby's name is Zachary. He's healthy now. He was a 28-weeker, weighing less than 900 grams. After 3 weeks that he was born, we had a flood that shut down the hospital. We kept him alive by hand for 9 hours until he was evacuated. I held him on skin to skin to keep him warm as soon as we got to the hospital. And then my husband got a crash course on how to give him manual breaths and keep him alive. So in those very dark moments, I promised Zach that his pain and struggle to survive were not in vain. I have a PhD in ergonomics and safety engineering. The nurses always encouraged me to ask questions and they taught me how to ask questions. One of the questions that I asked a nurse was, what is a common denominator of these babies when they grow? And she said, they don't like to be touched. And I am Hispanic. I was born in Colombia, born and raised. And in my culture, we hug. I mean, human contact has been very important in my life. And I couldn't imagine Zachary not having that. You know, I asked, is it that they don't develop that sense because they are so little? Or is it that, like every human, we learn by association and every time we touch him, it hurts? And the nurse said, we don't know. There's no way to research it. And so I said, you know, I need evidence of one. So I want my baby to not have that aversion to touch. And I want to see if I can help with that. So I held him a lot. I touched him a lot. The nurses taught me how to use my hands to comfort him. But then I had to go home. I couldn't stay in the NICU. I was like, who's going to do that when I'm not there? Who's going to hold him? Who's going to stay with him? Who's going to show him that he's not alone? And so that's when I started the Zaki.
Jamila invented the Zaki hug, a special weighted glove which helps to mimic the sensation of touch whilst babies are being cared for in an incubator.
And like positioning him and securing the equipment that was around him. And I would sleep with it to give my scent because I didn't know that he knew my scent. And I would do the same with Larry's. We would both do it. And we were like, you know, we want him to know that we are his parents, right? Because I was like, how does he know who the parents are if 150 people touch him every day? And then also, one of my biggest agonies in the NICU was, how does he know that we love him?
It's the result of over 3 years of engineering research. In the multiple research projects since, the results have shown the Zaki Hug's ability to reduce pain for babies during invasive and painful procedures. It is now being provided in hospitals in more than 32 countries. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
We experienced 3 different neonatal units in the UK, but that's just a very tiny corner of the world of neonatal care. Globally, the outcomes for neonatal babies have been improving. The number of neonatal deaths more than halved from 5 million in 1990 to 2.3 million in 2022. But there's still a long way to go, and neonatal experiences globally can be vastly different. A statistic from the World Health Organization in 2023 stopped me in my tracks. More than 90% of extremely preterm babies, less than 28 weeks, born in low-income countries, die within the first few days of life. Yet, less than 10% of extremely preterm babies die in high-income settings. I wanted to visit somewhere that's trying to implement change and solutions that can hopefully be shared worldwide to improve those figures. So, I headed to the Netherlands, to a university hospital in Utrecht.
I will ask if we can go in, and in the meanwhile you can wear...
WKZ is a children's hospital where doctors, researchers and students work together to develop innovative medical treatments. It's here that I met neonatologist Dr. Maria Luisa Tatarano, who is expanding her research into studying things like the effects of baby massage. The research has been ongoing for 2 years, and preliminary analysis of the data will begin in September, but initial signs are good.
Regarding the massage, what we see is that infants get more quiet. The saturation improves, heart rate also improves, and that happens also when they do skin to skin.
Dr. Jerome Dudink and Xiaowan Wang, a PhD student in biomedical engineering, are working together to explore the impact of uninterrupted sleep for infants and using technology to improve the quality of the sleep they get in neonatal care. They're investigating what better sleep can do for the brain development of these babies.
We all sleep about one-third of our lives. Very little is known about the role of sleep, and especially the role of sleep in early life brain development. So why do babies sleep for almost 22 hours a day in the womb? And it being the primary brain function, what happens in a neonatal intensive care unit when the babies are often disturbed in their sleep? Is that good or is that not good?
Engineer Xiaowan used AI to develop a sleep classification algorithm, which will help them to answer some of the questions they have about the importance of sleep for premature babies. The research into sleep began 5 years ago at WKZ, and the resulting paper is now allowing more research questions to be investigated.
We monitor the baby's sleep every minute. So every minute we know if the baby is sleeping or if the baby is awake. So it demonstrates this sleep percentage, the sleep duration can influence the brain development. And we hope this algorithm, this sleep baby algorithm can also improve this baby's outcome in the future.
There is also a music study taking place here too, seeing how music impacts brain development.
For the music study, the outcome is growth of the brain, but that is checked with the cerebral ultrasound. And we hope to see better maturation of brain activity in these infants. But the study is not finished yet.
Traffic is bad. special to Meg.
Jessie's special to you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he is my best friend and I love him.
Oh, that's nice.
I do.
We've explored a lot about the superhuman efforts that go into keeping babies alive, but sometimes it just isn't enough. And once upon a time, the care parents got would have promptly ended with the death of their baby. Thankfully, this is also changing.
I was pregnant with identical twin girls. We found out in end of 2015 that we were having identical twins. And towards the very end of December 2015, we found out that twin B, which was Sky, had a life-limiting condition, which was called anencephaly. It's a condition that basically means her skull hadn't formed properly. That was around 12 weeks that we found out that she wasn't going to survive.
Millie Khan is the founder of the Sky High Foundation, a charity set up to support parents during and after the loss of a twin, triplet or multiple, which began with a simple but incredibly effective purple butterfly. In 2016, Millie gave birth to Callie and Sky. Sky survived for just over 3 hours, and Callie spent time in neonatal care before coming home.
It was really important to be able to create something. We provide every single neonatal unit in the UK with our butterfly packs. And our butterfly packs include cot cards, which is where it all came about. This originally started by me creating a purple butterfly sticker.
That was me in bed.
Yeah, it was in your cot. And what's on your cot?
A butterfly.
What colour butterfly?
A purple and blue one.
Can you see what it says underneath that butterfly?
I just say, Bessie.
I was sat in the neonatal ward, and there's always twins in neonatal because a lot of them typically are born early, and we were in a room of, I think, six babies at the time, and Callie was in there. It wasn't in the high dependency. We were closer to getting home at that point, so it was the last room that we were in. There were two other sets of twins in there. And the parents were, rightly so, having amazing conversations about twins and chit-chatting about how amazing it is to have two. And all of the babies were crying, apart from Callie. Callie was silent. And one of the mums turned to me and said, "Oh, you're so lucky you haven't got twins," and laughed. She meant it in the nicest, funniest way to never insult me. And what she was trying to say is, "Oh, I'm going to have my hands full. You're so lucky you're not." When I say that, broke me. I'm quite a strong person, and of course I cried, but in public I had really managed to hold it together, and I ran out of the room. I went home that evening and I thought, there must be a way. There must be a way of making it really simple to let people know what's happened without me having to shout it from the rooftops. I ordered a purple butterfly sticker and I typed out a poster that explained what the sticker was. When I look back now at that poster, it wasn't very well written, I can tell you that now. And I went back into neonatal the next morning and I didn't ask anyone. I just shoved it up on the wall. I shoved it in the mum's room, on the door, on the notice board, on every single wall that I could. And I walked straight into Callie's cot and I put the sticker on there.
The purple butterfly appeared on Bobby's incubator in the time it took us to travel from the hospital where Jessie had died to the hospital where Bobby had been moved to during that time. To have something with Jessie's name near Bobby felt very important, and it also helped us to initiate those conversations with doctors and staff as they got to know Bobby.
In 2019, we registered, and in 2020, we received our charity status. The purple sticker that I ordered off Amazon has now become cot cards. The posters are very well written. We have family support leaflets. We have staff training. We now send out family packs because I remember feeling when I received a lot of the memory boxes and gifts, they were lovely, but nothing related to the fact that I actually had a surviving twin. So for me, that was really important.
The bereavement side of the care was something I had no idea existed, but we were swept up by both the neonatal nurses and a local charity, Forget Me Not Children's Hospice. Forget Me Not jump into action to give lots of options for parents after the death of a baby. And they made sure we'd created lasting keepsakes of Jessie's time with us. Some of those keepsakes went into Jessie's memory box, along with our purple butterfly.
I just opened in Jessie's box.
What's in there?
It got butterflies on.
Yeah, it's got butterflies. That is a special letter from one of the nurses who looked after Jessie.
The care that Bobby received straight from birth has continued, and he's still receiving it today. For parents of vulnerable babies, we sometimes have to just wait and see if there'll be any longer-term complications. but the science there is changing. In WKZ, they're pioneering a system that uses EEGs, an electroencephalogram, which are scans that record brain activity, taken during their first 3 days of life from babies born before 28 weeks. With the information they collect, they'll be able to provide parents with a greater understanding and insight into their children's future. With the scans able to predict not only future IQ scores for infants, but also how their social skills may develop. This research has been ongoing for the last 15 years and included data from over 400 infants. There is now a growing interest in conducting research based on multi-site data. The hope is that such collaboration will facilitate the use of an EEG-based prognostic tool in real-world neonatal healthcare settings in the near future. Here's Dr. Maria Luisa Tatarano.
We are one of the few centres that monitors extremely born preterm infants for the first 3 days after birth continuously. We know that this is the moment where most of brain injury occurs. And I thought we can maybe collect all these EEGs all over the 10 years. We collected them, look at them visually to see if these are normal according to the age of these infants, but also do some quantitative analysis with the help of an engineer to see if this is really predictive of outcome and if it's still useful and meaningful to continue doing that. And we were quite surprised from the results, I have to say.
Maria worked with data engineer Sharwan on this and found that from the EEGs taken in the first 3 days, they can predict both the total IQ scores and verbal IQ scores of those children between 5 and 7 years old.
The first 3 days is very early in development, and there is a lot that is going to happen afterwards. That's why this was quite surprising for me, because I thought maybe some kind of prediction could come out, but not so strong as we found. So I think neuromonitoring is very important in the first days after birth and tells a lot about which infants are more at risk for impairment later on. And this is two times important, I think. First, for the families, because you can counsel them appropriately. And second, also because there is a big discussion worldwide about how to follow these infants up, the long-term outcome. In some countries, there is no follow-up in place. In some other countries, a follow-up up to 2 years, which in my opinion is very short because most of the problems come afterwards. Some other countries, like here in the Netherlands, where we follow up to 8 years of age, and I think we should focus more resources on the high-risk infants. And these tools, together with others, of course, can help us in choosing the right target.
Do you like looking at these pictures?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you like looking at?
I was looking about when I was getting stronger.
When you were getting stronger?
Yeah. And there is another thing I like, and I like when they come home.
I liked when Bobby came home too, and I'm hopeful that even more babies will get to come home thanks to the solutions being put in place by some of the incredible people I've met. The babies admitted to neonatal care are some of the most vulnerable yet most resilient souls imaginable, and time spent in a neonatal unit shapes and impacts a whole family. Jesse was only with us for a short time, but he's woven tightly into the DNA of our family, and we say his name often and with joy. And perhaps Bobby's shaky start, me and his dad rushing between him and his brother while a whole army fought to save them both, has made him who he is. Completely, wildly, and wonderfully himself. What do you want to be when you grow up, Bobby?
I want to be a farmer. I will do a former dance on Tuesdays, and I want to be an astronaut, and I will do that on Fridays.
Farmer on Tuesdays and an astronaut on Fridays. Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yes.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. A Better Start was produced by Ailsa Rochester. It was an Audio Always production from the BBC World Service.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast, and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.